The United States has some unique characteristics that enabled the meltdown. In most countries, by contrast, increased mortgage distress occurs with economic downturns. It doesn't usually precipitate them, and it's an important distinction, for example, between what happened in Ireland and Spain, where mortgage distress has increased, but only as unemployment has risen, whereas in the US, mortgage distress increased well before unemployment started to rise. But in many other ways, the US housing and finance system isn't so unusual. Americans are not obviously more enamoured of home ownership than other people. We talk about a great Australian dream, just like you talk about a great American dream. Nor is the US government unusual in wanting to encourage home ownership. Most advanced countries do that to some extent, though often to a lesser extent and in different ways. And there's nothing to suggest that the inherent personal qualities of Americans, American households and lenders, made them liable to borrow or lend more than is prudent. Americans are not more prone to whipping themselves into a speculative frenzy than people in other countries. Let me assure you that your counterparts elsewhere are just as susceptible to overexuberance during a credit boom. The boom in credit and structured finance was global. We saw it in many more places than the US mortgage market. The question we have to ask then is, why did it have such damaging consequences in that market? And as you can tell, for policy reasons that there are media here and I have to give a prepared remarks, I'm going to abuse my moderator's privilege by speaking for a little bit of time on that topic, and I would identify in particular four key factors as explanations. The first is that housing supply is quite elastic here in the United States, at least in enough parts of the country to matter. The housing boom was a construction boom as well as a price boom. You can see that here in housing construction, which is the blue line in this graph. As a result, by 2006, there was already a substantial overhang of excess supply, and you can see that in the homeowner vacancy rate, which was rising, very rapidly through 2006. The inherent stock-flow interaction in the housing market means that construction booms sow the seeds of their own destruction. Prices can undershoot formerly sustainable levels. The second factor is that the system of financial regulation here did not stop an even greater easing in lending standards than occurred in other countries. And they eased in a way that exacerbated the tendency of mortgage borrowers to default in a bust. There were gaps in both prudential and consumer protection regulation. Even when the regulations applied, they didn't prevent lending practices not seen elsewhere, especially around lack of income documentation and lack of amortisation, or indeed negative amortisation in some cases. This links to the third factor, which is that there are a range of tax and legal differences, as well as industry conventions, that created a system that discouraged amortisation. Interest-only loans, explicit negative amortisation loans, and cash-out refinancing all meant that loan-to-valuation ratios that were high at origination stayed high well into the life of the loan. American households are less likely to pay their mortgages down ahead of schedule than in Australia. I wish we had some other countries to compare to here, but these are the only ones for which we've been able to find comparable data. Trade-up buyers, so buyers that already have a home and are moving to a new one, trade-up buyers seem to have high loan-to-valuation ratios in the United States, and that just doesn't seem to be true in Australia. And the result of all this is that the US housing stock is far more leveraged than that in Australia, even during a boom period. Finally, the United States has chosen a host of international arrangements outside of the housing finance system that result in US households facing more idiosyncratic and collective risk than their counterparts in many other developed countries. Now, flexible labour markets, limited welfare systems, and US-style healthcare and elder care systems are understandable and perfectly legitimate policy choices. But these policy choices have implications for what can be safely managed in the housing finance system. And this fact needs to be taken into account when designing mortgage and housing policy in this country. With all that in mind, how can the United States restore its housing sector to health? That's the question for today's panel, and I'd like to reflect on it for another minute or so. In my view, fixing the US housing system will require the reversal of a fifth unusual factor. During the boom, on-balance sheet mortgage lending was not seen as being a profitable or attractive business for US banking institutions. That's extraordinary to foreign eyes. Absolutely extraordinary. I believe that a healthy mortgage market is only feasible when sound mortgage lending is an attractive business for prudentially regulated firms. Ideally, it should be possible for these firms collectively to dominate that industry, even if they do not actually do so in reality. I also think more could be done to encourage mortgage amortisation. Paying your mortgage down before the bust is the most effective way of avoiding getting into negative equity once housing prices start to fall. In the long run, this might require adjusting the tax deductibility of mortgage interest for owner-occupiers. That's not a feature of the Australian or Canadian or UK tax systems, for example. But amortisation can be encouraged by the design of the mortgage contract. It might be worth considering adjustable rate mortgages in a more positive light. They offer some advantages, at least if they don't have aggressive teaser rates. In particular, they allow the borrower to make prepayments that can be redrawn later if needed. Think of this as like a home equity loan where the maximum balance declines over time the same way as a normal credit financier mortgage would do. Such loans are common in Australia and they've proven a highly effective vehicle for precautionary savings. Of course, the transition from here to a healthy housing sector won't be straightforward, and I am reminded of the joke about the tourist who asked directions in Dublin, and after a few false starts of trying to explain the way, the locals said, "Well, I wouldn't start from here." Distressed households may need help to put their finances in order. Further economic recovery will help, and so will programs to restructure household debt burdens. Our speakers today will drill into some of the possible approaches to reforming the US housing finance system. As with any other program of structural reform, there will be a lot of hard work ahead and it will be uncomfortable for many participants in those markets. But even with everything that's going on globally, I can't think of a structural reform program anywhere in the developed world that will do more to improve the near-term lot of ordinary households in that country.